Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9 to 5 for a 5 to 9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Payne and Pendergast with you. Text message here real quick before we get to the burning question of which GM has done Payne and Pendergast and other content generators across town the most solids through their trades over the last several years. Text message. This goes back to Kevin Durant on Twitter, me saying that I'm now rooting for him on Twitter. I like that he cooked Emmanuel Acho on Twitter yesterday. Text message says, Sean is definitely going to be the first one in the city to get sideways with Durant on Twitter, LOL.
Oh, gosh, yeah. I don't think so. I think who's the last athlete, who was the last Houston athlete that got really angry with you?
I don't know if DeAndre Hopkins was angry with me, but he was upset enough with me to make that wisecrack about how I should have my wife wearing his jersey while we're in bed so I can fantasize about him while I'm laying next to her.
That's how obsessed you are with him. Yeah. And that wasn't while he was in Houston. That was while he was with Tennessee.
I can tell you exactly what I tweeted. This was when he was in Tennessee, correct?
Yeah.
And it was during training camp. So it was probably, a year ago, maybe. It might have been 2 years ago, where he was practicing. And it was video. And I retweeted and said, rare footage of DeAndre Hopkins practicing.
Yeah.
Didn't tag him on it. I don't tag athletes on it generally. I know a lot of people say, well, you should tag him on it because why are you being a chicken? If you're going to say it to his Twitter face. I don't want to subject them to all the replies and the likes and the engagement. They don't need
that. Well, it's more aggressive. It's kind of like that separation of – it's like a separation of church and state where you just like, all right, like I'm not going to go after this guy personally.
Right.
But usually what happens is somebody will forward it to him or something.
Yeah.
That's how guys find out about it.
Now, I've been blocked, but I don't think I'm rare in this case. The DeAndre Hopkins thing would be something – if I were trying to make a case that Sean Pendergast – would be the first one to get sideways with Kevin Durant on social media. That would be exhibit A for me, the DeAndre Hopkins. That made the Chronicle, that whole back and forth. And DeAndre and I privately on DM ended up shaking hands. He DM'd me and said, it's all love, don't worry about it, whatever.
Yeah. But it's all love as long as, Amy's wearing his jersey. Yeah,
love.
It's some kind of L word.
Right. I bought three of them that day. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, But Brian Cushing blocked me, but I don't think I'm alone. I think Cushing went on a block party at one point on social media.
I think Cushing may have had somebody kind of managing his social media for him, just blocking things. Yeah, because sometimes people will just, what happens sometimes is guys, I do think, well, I know, sometimes guys will block a person, not because of something that person said about the athlete himself, but because you said something snarky about one of his teammates or his friends. He's like, screw this guy. I don't need that in my life.
Yeah, which I'm in full support of. I don't care. I'm not mad at Brian. If I saw Brian Cushing at training camp, I wouldn't walk up to him and say, why'd you block me on Twitter or something like that? I don't care one way or the other. I just think it's funny that at least for one person, I've carved out enough of a persona where they think that my newfound love with Kevin Durant is on a very, very thin sheet of ice right now.
Yeah. Now, if you're with Durant, it doesn't have to be vicious criticism or anything.
Right.
It might just catch his eye that you criticize him for something at all.
Yeah.
And you won't, you're not afraid to do that. So that's where it could get very, very public. Yes. And I hope it does. Yes.
You've brought this up before where my gut reaction when I see athletes reacting to things that they're not tagged in is they're searching their name. And you bring this up and I think it's a valid point. No, they've got people that are watching and probably are showing it to them or whatever.
Well, go ahead.
My point is this. I think Durant searches his name.
Oh, okay.
I think Durant's that's where I was going with it. I think Durant's a name searcher.
Somebody said something funny the other day, which was there's a guy, I think it was Darth Texan, said my worst take ever was on draft night when I said J.J. Watt's ceiling was Seth Payne.
Yeah.
That, he could be a solid player, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah. Will Kunkel, tweeted about that, and I follow Will Kunkel, so my name came up.
Yeah.
And the guy, Darth Texan, hadn't tagged me or anything, right. But it popped up because I follow Will Kunkel.
Yeah.
I mean, it was a very, the guy was cool. He wasn't throwing shade at me. Obviously it was a bad take.
No,
JJ was slightly better than me in his career.
It was.
Yes.
And he pointed out the delta. I didn't think he had to go to the magnitude to which JJ exceeded your performance.
Oh, no, it was like, that's a bad, if he said JJ, yeah. That's a classic, you know, it was a bad take. That's a classic white guy, like a white defensive lineman yeah. take, you know, like, lunch pail guy. Look at him. Looks like he grew up in a cornfield. Yeah. Well, I guess, he must be just like that, like Seth Payne. That's racist.
It's racist. But I will say this, that people looking at that take now go, how could you confuse, like, you were a big dude. You were a big, beefy, 320-pound guy. JJ was much beefier when he came into the league, though. Like, I think some people would say, like,
he had a lot of baby fat.
Yeah. They're like peak JJ Watt, his physique didn't look like a three technique or anything like that.
Yeah.
But when he came into the league, like, he was, you know, 15 pounds either way could have determined where on the defensive line he could have been playing.
You know, the difference, though, is when you look at his combine stats and everything, I did this the other day.
It's just details.
I looked at Max Crosby, Trey Hendrickson, and J.J. Watt.
Yeah.
All of them very lightly recruited coming out of high school.
Yeah.
You know, J.J. recruited as a tight end to Central Michigan. And I'm looking at it, and they're freak athletes. And I can't, like, all these stupid college coaches out there, they were like, I don't know about this guy.
Yeah.
Looks more like a grinder to me. It looks more like a lunch bell guy.
Yeah, and now they're like the best at what they do.
Yeah.
It's pretty incredible. All right, so which GM, boy, this Kevin Durant trade is the latest trade in what's been years of us getting pretty damn good material from our three teams here. And Seth, you know, for two of them, it's been good material regardless of which end of the spectrum they've been on as a team. You know, the Astros have largely been making deals that are putting the finishing touches on championship level teams. The Rockets and the Texans have been on either end of deals that are either bringing in star power or sending out star power. So let's go through this here and rate the material that the GMs have given us. I've got two GMs for each of the three teams. Let's start with the Texans. Bill O'Brien, in his short stint as general manager, gave us swap meet Saturday, I like to call it, where he traded Laremy Tunsil for a couple of first-round picks and a second-round pick. There was other stuff in there. Traded Jadeveon Clowney the same day for a third-round pick and a couple of players. There were even some other trades that day. I think it was the day they traded Martinez Rankins for Carlos Hyde, and there were a couple other deals. He was doing a lot of trading that day. Gave us that. And gave us the DeAndre Hopkins trade several months later.
Those were arguably the headline stories in the NFL.
Both days. For weeks. Yeah.
The DeAndre Hopkins trade, it was a headline story for a full year, it seemed. And around the NFL, not just in Houston.
Yeah.
The Tunsil and Clowney ones, too. There was just so much drama involved with the Clowney trade. Yeah. Remember Bill O'Brien was acting like, hey, he just needs to... They had a deal in place to trade Clowney to Miami. And O'Brien, meanwhile, publicly is saying like, hey, he just needs to show up and report, and then we can discuss things. Clowney sniffed out the ambush and did not do that.
Yeah.
And ended up getting a deal that was much more favorable to him to go to Seattle. There was so much drama, and they both ended up providing more drama afterwards. But they were both, all of it was negative.
Yeah.
Other than just Clowney, over time, you could see where okay, his, you know, he never really fully realized his potential. But it's going to be hard to beat O'Brien.
This is providing material. This is the sauciness of their GM reign. Bill O'Brien, pretty good. And I would say too, Seth, even during that season, it was a 2019 actual season, the only actual season in which O'Brien was a GM. Yeah. It was the 2019 season and four games of 2020. Even during that 2019 season, like, ooh, Vernon Hargreaves got waived. Texans pick him up. Ooh, Gerrion Conley's available. Let's give him a third-round pick for Gerrion Conley. Like, Duke Johnson. Remember, there was a Duke Johnson trade in there. I'm like, O'Brien kept it spicy, man, when he was the GM. All right. So he was pretty good. So that I don't know how we're rating this. This is
hard when you grade. Okay, when you grade the first contestant, it's always difficult because it sets the scale.
Yeah.
On a scale of 1 to 10.
1 to 10.
I'll put him at a healthy 7.5.
Okay, sounds good. And we can always revisit these once we're done. He's a 7.5. All right, Nick Caserio. Nick's made a lot of deals too. He can't help make deals on draft night. He makes like 10 of
them.
He's
a volume shooter.
He's yes, he is.
Him and Morey are the volume shooters.
He's Allen Iverson, yes. I would say the big ones for Caserio would be obviously the Deshaun Watson trade, which is like a year-long saga.
Yeah.
You know, the same way the Hopkins trade was a shock, but it was a thing for another year. The Deshaun Watson thing has been a thing for 4 years now. It was the actual trade, but the before and after was wild, too.
Yeah. So, and that was a crossover hit nationally.
Yep.
But although largely ignored, the national media tried to ignore the Deshaun Watson scenario as much as possible.
Yes.
Because they didn't want to actually have to talk about serious things.
Yeah.
Like sexual assault allegations.
Right.
But by the time the trade went down, obviously it was a mega story.
Mega story. Will Anderson trade on draft night, one of the biggest trades, I would say one of the biggest trades in draft history on draft night. Considering
for non-quarterbacks especially. Yeah. It's up there with Julio Jones and Travis Hunter.
For a team that just took a quarterback with the very previous pick right there.
Yeah, and that supersedes the Falcons and the Travis Hunter pick too because of the quarterback dynamic.
Yeah. The quarterback dynamic.
And remember, and all the drama leading up to it, mm-hmm. a lot of people were convinced the Texans weren't going to take a quarterback at all.
Yeah.
Can't believe the Texans aren't going to take a quarterback. Remember Shannon Sharp went on a long spiel about how inept the Texans were because they weren't going to draft the quarterback.
Yeah,
yes.
They took one with the second pick. And then I would say the Stephon Diggs trade was a pretty big one when it went down. That was the top story on Get Up and First Take and all that. So
I'd have to give him, if I gave Bill O'Brien a 7.5, the Deshaun Watson one.
He's
got to
be
so
more. He's got to be higher than O'Brien, right?
I'll put him at 9. 9. He's at a 9.
Oh, for Nick Caserio. All right.
For sauciness that he brings with
sauciness
trades.
That's what we're grading on, like providing content and sauciness for Payne and Pendergast. All right. A quick note on the Texans as we close the book. Brian Gain gets like a zero. Brian Gain gets a 1.5 on the Demaryius Thomas trade at the trade deadline because I don't think he made any other trades while he was the GM.
And did he kept a clean record, right? He never made a draft day trade.
I don't think he did.
Was that the never made a draft day trade?
Yeah.
So compared to Caserio, it's just night and day in
night
terms of sauciness provided.
Yep. All right. So Rockets. All right, we're grading the Houston has been trade central the last 7 or 8 years. How have the GMs done in providing us material? I would say the big ones for the Rockets in terms of trades, Seth, would be the Chris Paul trade in 2017, which the only reason it was a trade, he was going to sign here, but it turned into a trade so they could, jerry-rig the salary cap and they gave him a big contract the next year. But we'll call it a trade because it ended up being a trade. And then the Russell Westbrook trade, which happened while I was at a Billy Joel concert in Madison Square Garden in July.
I feel like I know we've got a 10-year limit on this, so it makes it difficult because it's hard to talk about Morey without the James Harden trade. I mean, that's but it's only this.
But
is
I wasn't at the station
years.
At that time. This is providing
right,
sauciness
okay.
for us
boy,
over the last several
boy,
years.
It feels dirty leaving out the James Harden trade because that's in terms of benefit provided and unlikeliness of it. It would be hard for me to put anybody below the James Harden trade.
Okay,
but
well, let's include it then, because you know what? This is why we'll include it. Forget about my timeline being with the station. That trade happened in 2012. I got here in 2014.
Yeah,
you're absolutely right that James Harden was in the building.
Yeah,
fueled everything that was going on in the building at the time. So we will make an exception here and allow the Harden trade to be part of that.
Okay, I got it. This is hard because obviously I have a Texans bias in a lot of regards.
Sure.
And I'm trying not to weight the magnitude of some of Caserio's trades against just the skill and the buzz and everything else. So I'm going to kind of balance things out a little. The NFL always brings more sauciness in general than the NBA because just more people are engaged with it. And yet, if I look at Caserio.
Yeah.
The huge, huge trade is Deshaun Watson, quarterback, marquee position.
Yep.
But if I look at the Rockets, the NBA and the superstar dynamic, when you include names like James Harden, Chris Paul, and Russell Westbrook.
Yep.
But it's also a league in which more trades happen.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
And it's sauciness. It's nothing
sauciness.
Else.
So you're
sauciness and nothing else. Not what happened afterwards. Okay.
Your internal debate right now, it sounds like, is do I put Morey above Caserio?
Yeah. And this is where I'm going to go with it. This is where I'm going to go with it. In terms of the sauciness it provided at the time,
yeah,
there were still question marks with James Harden as to, hey, well, great, he's sixth man of the year, yeah, this, that, the other thing. Daryl Morey himself will tell you he didn't foresee James Harden becoming what he did.
Yeah.
So I'm not grading the actual effects afterwards, but the sauciness of it, I'm going to have to give it, partly because it's just, it's the NBA and it doesn't provide as much juice as, yeah, the NFL.
Yep.
I gave Caserio a 9. I'll give Morey an 8.9.
8.9. I like that. I like that you didn't go 8.5. I like that you went 1/10
it's
of a point
close,
below.
Sean.
I know. No, these are important.
Honestly,
numbers.
If roles were switched, this is a classic, you know, like how would this quarterback do if he played on another team? If the roles were switched and Morey was on the Texans, yeah, and Caserio were in the NBA, then Morey would probably have the edge right
Those
now.
Are some of the most fun conversations when the GMs kind of cross over and start talking about the moves in the other sports, you know,
yeah,
and how,
yeah,
they view them. And that's kind of fun. All right, Rafael Stone. Rafael Stone, he succeeded Daryl Morey when Morey left. And he was handed a little similar to Caserio, kind of dealt a very substandard hand. You know, James Harden and Russell Westbrook both wanting out, you know, traded. I guess I'll add the Russell Westbrook trade for Stone here on the notes, because that brought in John Wall, who sat and earned $47 million for doing nothing.
Yeah.
That's kind of saucy.
Yeah.
The James Harden trade that Russell's, they both, Morey and Stone both made James Harden trades. Morey brought him in. Stone sent him out. The picks from that Brooklyn trade are still fueling the Rockets to this day. They got Tari Eason. They got Reed Shepard. They flipped a bunch of those picks to get the Phoenix picks, which then turned into part of the Kevin Durant trade as well. And then the actual Kevin Durant trade that just went down. Now, Stone's issue is, it's not his problem, but he had about a 3-year period there where you can't. There's no trades to be made. Like you're not. You have no stars to trade out, and no star is coming here in a trade. So he had his hands tied for a few years. And yet, with the couple of years where he was a GM that could make deals, these are pretty big deals, trading out Westbrook and Harden and bringing in Kevin Durant.
On the skill level side of things, including what he got for James Harden, I'd
10.
Give him very, very good grades,
yes,
on that.
Yeah.
The problem with, if I'm giving the GM the credit for the sauciness of what they pulled off.
Yeah.
Harden, he did a really good job playing the cards he was dealt.
Yes.
Rafael Stone did with James Harden. So, but in terms of actual sauciness, I'm going to put him above Bill O'Brien because I think he just did a better job of everything.
Fair.
So I'll give him a 7.5. I'll give him an 8.0
for, yeah, Rafael Stone. All right. So far, before we get to baseball, the rankings are as follows. Nick Caserio, 9.0 on the P&P sauciness scale. Daryl Morey just behind him at 8.9. Rafael Stone, 8.0. Bill O'Brien, for a guy who was horrible at his job, a very robust 7.5 sauciness score. All right, let's
get AFC South champions 2 years in a row, Brian.
That's true.
But you guys are back in the...
Doesn't matter what it looked like.
Yep.
Back in the playoffs. Looking forward to the playoffs.
That's back when he was just a coach, though. That was back, you know, he was chippy. That was saucy, yeah, for sure. But he doesn't get points for that, Colin. Valid point. He doesn't get points for that. All right, let's get to the baseball stuff here, Seth. Jeff Luhnow. I think it boils down to 3 trades for Jeff Luhnow. Deadline trade for Justin Verlander. Garrett Cole trade in the offseason, that following offseason, and then a Zach Greinke trade that was reported literally moments after the trade deadline. It went up that close to the two big names there that he got at the trade deadline, Verlander and Greinke, were both at the 11th hour, like they minutes away from the deadline hitting.
Yeah.
Those are the 3. I mean, Luhnow obviously made a ton of trades while he was the general manager and a ton of free agency signings. But those are the big ones. Those and deadline deals should carry a sauciness bonus with them, I think, when they're made at the deadline. But that's up to you. I don't want to tell you how to score these things.
I think that there's something. You're going to hate this part of it, Sean. You're going to hate this. All right.
Okay.
You're going to call me a jerk and an idiot and a spoil sport. Yes, the Zach Greinke trade was great, but and he ended up going 32-14. If you include Arizona in that year, because that's the way I had to sort these stats, over that three-year period, including before he got to Houston, but over that three-year period, he went 32-14. That's who also went 32-14 in that three-year period?
Who?
One Charles Morton.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
So Greinke was making up for just letting Charlie Morton walk.
Okay.
I still can't get over that a little bit. Yeah, I love Greinke, but they were basically identical. Their ERAs were very similar, basically identical pitchers. But I just Charlie Morton a lot more embraceable.
Yeah.
The Verlander trade, boy.
It won him a World Series. I mean,
we talked sauciness. It happened as Harvey was ravaging the city.
Great point.
Like, it happened with Dallas Keuchel convincing Verlander, like, look, it's not as bad. It's really bad, but don't worry, it'll be cool.
It was drizzling. It wasn't too bad. It was.
Yeah, I know. Dallas Keuchel may have lied a little bit in telling him about what it was like in Houston
at
that moment.
Right.
Dallas Keuchel did live in a high rise, you know, right up there, the road on
really?
Wesleyan.
Okay.
Yeah. He lived in that nice high rise at Wesleyan and Richmond.
Yeah, that's a nice one. Yeah.
It was one of the sushi place in the bottom.
Yeah.
So he wasn't as affected by it. Ah, boy. The Verlander trade was gigantic.
Gigantic.
The Gerrit Cole, the Cole and the Greinke. Greinke, you know, I discount that a little bit. Boy, I'm trying to take skill and actual outcome.
Sauciness, Seth.
I know the sauciness of trading for Verlander.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to put him at, what's Maury at?
Maury is at an 8.9.
I'll put Luno at 8.5.
8.5, right in between the two Rocket GMs and a half a point behind Nick Caserio. The Verlander one, the Cole one, so the sauciness of the Cole one, like, is the Cole trade is not nearly as memorable as some of these other ones. Because it happened in the dead of the offseason, you know, and I know these other ones do as well, but there's something about NFL deals in the offseason that are always saucy because they involve draft picks and the draft is coming up, you know, in a month or whatever. In-season trades always carry a lot of weight. The Verlander one, you could argue, is the biggest trade in the history of the city, considering that he went on to win the ALCS MVP and was undefeated down the stretch for a playoff team. The Greinke one was kind of fun. That was when the trade deadline was like on a Wednesday. And it came down, and you're like, man, they are just stacking guys now. I'm with you on that. I'm with you. Luno, it's not as saucy as Maury and Caserio, but I would argue he's the best GM in the history of the city. I want to make sure that people understand that we are not rating these GMs on their performance. We are rating them on the sizzle of what they did in trades, specifically in trades as the general manager. I'm with you on Luno. All right, last one. Current GM for the Astros. Hasn't really had enough time to stack a bunch of sizzle yet, but on Dana Brown's watch, Justin Verlander came back to the team at the trade deadline in 2023.
Yeah.
And then he made the Kyle Tucker trade this offseason, which so far looks like a very good trade for the Astros, considering how Isak Paredes has performed and the potential that Cam Smith is flashing right now.
Yeah, the Verlander trade, I mean, that's... On a scale of sauciness, that's about like mild salsa for people with dietary restrictions.
Okay.
I don't know. It's just that very soupy, bland, not that saucy whatsoever.
Okay.
The Tucker, huge. That was huge.
Tucker, huge.
That's a huge, huge, huge. Lots of sauce to that, especially because it provided immediate drama and how the Cubs are going to do this year, everything else. Yeah. So he's coming out of the gate pretty good. But he just needs more volume and more time. I'm going to put him at a 7.0 right now.
7.0. Yeah, I was thinking the exact same thing. He has not done things that have generated nearly as much conversation as these other five guys, and a lot of it probably has to do with small sample size right now.
Yeah.
I'm telling you what, like Brown, you know, Brown did the Kikuchi trade at the trade deadline as well, but that's not a massive name. And again, this isn't about performance. This is about sauciness and sizzle. So Brown, 7.0.
Is it quick? Because I know some people are going to say, hey, Seth, I thought you weren't judging the outcome because I brought up Charlie Morton and how he played afterwards. I did. I was one of those people that I was very excited about the Greinke trade, but there was an annoying part of me. It was like, well, you could have just kept Charlie Morton.
Yeah.
So there's a way of just – they were almost identical for the next – that three-year period from 19 to 21, and I had to include Arizona just because of the way – I don't have the premium. Greinke from 19 to 21, 3.57 ERA, 32-14.
Yep.
Charlie Morton in that same time period, 3.33 ERA, record of 32-14.
Yeah, yeah. No, Morton was...
Same age, too. That was age 35 through 37 for both of them.
Yeah, yeah. The only thing I would say is, they made the Greinke trade, obviously. The decision to let Morton go, they might have done over again. You know, I think their feeling probably was... He was a decent pitcher, came through our car wash, and then he's going to be out of the car wash. You know,
there's more of a, like, if you're evaluating as objectively as possible, you know, you've got this nice window of Charlie Morton versus an entire career. Which guy's going to age better over the course of 3 years? Like, Charlie Morton was just a unicorn in the arc of his career and everything that happened and how he played after he left Houston. Yeah. We should get Charlie Morton. We got to check in on. He's playing his guitar somewhere.
He plays for the Orioles.
That's right.
Yeah, yep. I would. And you know, the Orioles have not been good this year. I think they're going to be shipping guys out. That might be. I don't know how Charlie's doing this year. I haven't followed that close. But if he's doing decent, that could be an arm that you might be able to get on a low rent deal at the trade deadline that would make people really happy. A little nostalgia. From
got a 5.06 ERA.
Yeah, but, so maybe a really, really, really low-level prospect for Charlie Morton.
And he's pitched 142 innings,
All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. All right, I need to check. We have multiple texts about something the Rockets may or may not have done.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I got to...
Is there breaking news about Rafael Stone landing as low as he did on the sauciness ranking?
Yeah, no, it's not about that.
What are the texts you're getting? We won't say that it's news until we verify.
It's a signing, and if there's no until I get a push notification from Shams Charania at ESPN. Then I'm going to hold off on reporting. I've learned that.
You're not reporting it. You're just telling us. We're just having a conversation here about what people are claiming. There's rumors.
They're claiming that Russell Westbrook has signed with the Houston Rockets.
That's fake. Fake. Yeah. Who is that?
Get out.
I'm looking at the real Shams Charania here. So, anyways, we'll take a look. That's the text page. Colin, can you do some research for us here? All right. Thank you.
Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9-to-5 for a 5-to-9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services is not available in all areas.
Payne and Pender. Actually, before you do that research, let's hit some of this C.J. Stroud from Fanatics Fest. This was C.J. Stroud. He was at Fanatics Fest, big festival celebrating athletes and athletics this weekend in New York City. He was on a panel with Bryce Young, Caleb Williams. Kay Adams was the moderator, and she asked C.J. Stroud, where does poise rank on the traits that you need to be successful in the NFL?
Probably one or two spots below leadership. Because I think poise has to do with being a leader. Your ability to not ride the waves and ride the roller coaster and have poise is, I think, the pulse of the locker room. When you walk in, and this is something that I learned in college, but kind of like Eli said, it takes another scale when you're walking in a huddle and it's a 2-minute drill and it's the last play of the game and you have a dude with three kids staring at you in your eyes, ready to get the play. Another guy, you know, who's a grown man, just men, you know, wanting a leader, you know. It reminds me of, just the great leaders that came before us that weren't in football. And, like, Martin Luther King Jr., Moses in the Bible. Like, there's guys that I look up to that, like, I would just imagine how they would approach a huddle. And that's the type of poise that I try to strive for. I think it's right there with leadership and, that's how you win and lose games.
Yeah, just by the Russell Westbrook thing, I think there's a fake account called NBA Centel that cited a Yahoo writer who hasn't posted in 2 years as the source for
one person sending multiple texts asking about it. Is this real? I couldn't see that the font for the phone numbers are really, really small. So I'm just glancing.
Yeah.
I'm seeing.
So that's clearly fake.
It's clearly fake. Shams Charania, the real Shams Charania, tweeted 6 minutes ago about somebody the Knicks are interviewing for their head coaching job. So he is awake. Yeah.
Are we sure that wasn't Stephen A. Smith? Though?
It's not Stephen A. Smith. No, it's Shams Charania. No, we're good. We're good. All right. Yeah, C.J. Stroud and poise.
As far as CJ and Poise and looking into the eyes of grown men and all of that, I like that he cited Moses and Martin Luther King.
And Poise.
It's always dicey. He pulled himself in. Yeah. Sometimes you don't want to compare yourself directly to those guys,
right,
and say, well, you know, basically I'm like Moses here. Yeah, but looking at them as role models of who you'd like to be,
yeah,
and like how to conduct your life. Yes, yes. Great to try to emulate great people from history, sure.
Yeah.
But that part of it, I don't think that we've ever worried about that with CJ one bit. If anything, remember, a lot of the veterans in CJ's rookie year were saying, hey, man, no, you're the guy. Like, guys respect you. Guys want to follow you. He was on a panel with Caleb Williams and Bryce Young.
Bryce Young, yeah.
I don't feel, and I'm not even throwing shade at them. CJ just comes off as an older soul,
yeah,
than those two guys. Caleb and Bryce Young still, in a lot of ways, come off as very young men who I could see maybe having a hard time commanding,
yeah,
an NFL locker room. I think CJ, maybe by virtue of the, like, he's different than that.
He's got the pelts on the wall, too. Even when you just look at the three of them up on the stage, you're like, well, that guy's won two divisions. He's won a couple blowout playoff games. Bryce Young strung together about a half dozen good games at the end of his second year, and Caleb Williams had a rookie year where he won five games or whatever it was. You know, they've just he's accomplished more than those guys. Now, last year wasn't as good as year one for CJ. Kay Adams asked, how have last year's failures affected your development?
Last year was very, very, very helpful for me and my development. You know, I think every year, you know, you're playing against different defensive coordinators, different schemes, and they're studying your tape from the years prior on how to beat you and how to twist the pocket and how to roll coverage. And they're just doing things to throw you off. And the more you can focus on you by still, you know, making sure that you're taking care of the football and knowing what they're doing, I think that, I mean, honestly, you can do anything that you really want. I mean, really all of us, I mean, you know, Peyton, Eli, you've seen them be great for so many years. That's what they did year and year and year and after. So I know us three, we're trying to do the same thing. So just learn from your mistakes and, you know, just really get better from those. And that's been my mindset.
Yeah, the understanding how murky the look can get, CJ really got a dose of that this year, especially the Vikings game. The Vikings game was when that Vikings defense was really humming at its on all cylinders, and they do a great job of just really confusing quarterbacks and thinking you're seeing one thing and then you see another. And teams did a good job of that against CJ and Bobby Slowick. I think the sophomore slump and the challenges they faced, you saw this year, was as much about Bobby Slowick as it was about C.J. Stroud. Bobby Slowick, when C.J. mentions all those shell coverages, Bobby Slowick didn't do a great job of adjusting to that either. There was the way they were calling the games and the way they were operating, it was almost like they were in denial about the coverages that they were seeing.
Yeah.
So that part of it is, it's going to be really interesting to watch with Nick Caley, because there's one thing, Caley, who was in New England and worked with Tom Brady, if there's one thing that Brady was awesome at, it was diagnosing the coverages and then taking the easy money based on, okay, I thought I was seeing this, but I'm not seeing what I thought. Boom. Don't hesitate. You're dumping it to the running back. And then the running back can do something with it.
Yeah.
Or you're jumping down, and you're not going 1, 2, 3, 4 in the progression. You're jumping from 1 to 4 immediately. And that's something that just takes time and experience and reps. And I think CJ did make progress in that last year. It's the difficulty this year is, okay, he made progress last year, but now he's also learning a new system.
Yeah.
And exactly, it might not be seamless at first, but he's 100% capable of doing it.
How do you think we'd be feeling that, you know, if you look at the Texans, Seth, and you look at the offense last year and how it dipped from the season before, there's two places people were pointing the finger: Bobby Slowick and the offensive line. What if they had only replaced one of those this past offseason?
I would have been really nervous if they hadn't replaced Bobby Slowick.
Yeah.
And, you know, what I was saying at the end of the season was, look, it's not just the offensive line. It's every position group. You know, we can complain about all those wide receiver screens all we want. You know who was really bad on those also was the actual other – the other wide receivers who were supposed to be blocking,
yep,
who looked like they didn't know – who the hell they're supposed to be blocking. Or the fact that the defenses could sniff out a screen really, really well, yeah. which means that there's tells beforehand, and that's on the offensive coordinator. So when it came to wide receiver blocking, tight end blocking, offensive line blocking, honestly, Joe Mixon and some of his decision-making on certain plays, every position group had serious deficits when it came to execution. And that's why it drove me insane when Bobby Slowick would get up and basically almost create a fake line between the offense and the scheme and the execution. Because mm-hmm. the offensive coordinator is ultimately responsible for the execution.
Yep.
And they just flat out weren't executing. So I would have been really nervous because I didn't know. By the end of last year, I didn't really feel like Bobby Slowick knew what he was doing when it came to actually coaching whatever he wanted those guys to
do. Yeah, I could envision like a new OC going, all right, they'll get something out of this offensive line. Like, it's a talented offensive line. They got physical talent.
Yeah.
But if it was Bobby Slowick with all this churn on the offensive line, I would have been holy crap scared, you know?
That would have been an indication from the team that they thought Bobby Slowick was just fine.
Yes.
You know, and yeah. that it was all these other guys who, when you look at guys who are playing across the board as the worst version of themselves, when you see guys who have played better in their career and it's position group by position group, you cannot not blame the offensive coordinator for that as well.
Yeah.
Yes, there's personal accountability for the players themselves, but there were just too many times where it was clear that guys were not on the same page.
Yep.
It was a disheveled mess.
We're getting texts about the sauciest GMs in Houston when it comes to trades. Text message, Yordan Alvarez for Josh Fields was huge, way better than the Greinke trade. Yeah, but that trade, nobody knew who Yordan Alvarez was at the time. There was
but
no
But it was
sauce.
A really good trade.
Oh,
really
yeah,
there was
trade.
No sauciness at the
yeah,
time. Yeah,
yeah. It's,
yeah, yeah, yeah. You guys got to listen to the parameters here. We're grading sauciness.
Yeah, it's
not
saucy.
Not the overall outcome.
We've
of
never
it.
Had a sauciness rating in this city before. We're breaking new ground.
This is going to drive me insane because I know this is going to go exactly. Remember when I asked whether young men thought Beyonce was hot. And I said, because yeah. I'm 50 and I think she's hot, but Beyonce's 40 years older. So now, I was curious very specifically
very.
About do young men, like yeah. guys who are 19 or 21 years old, think Beyonce, do they think of her as hot?
Yeah.
And we were flooded with people saying, I'm 45 and yes, of course she's hot.
Yeah.
They couldn't understand the simple instructions.
It's tough.
It drives me
man.
Crazy to this day. And then I told you, I posed the same question at Thanksgiving,
yeah.
and my mom,
yeah.
who's 70,
yeah.
was like, oh, of course she's hot.
Yeah.
She's really. I'm like, mom, I've got your teenage grandson is sitting there right next to you. That's the guy I'm asking,
right,
not
right,
you.
Right. And your mom's smart, too, right? Like she
was probably one of the people texting in that day.
That would have been awesome. All right, Payne and Pendergast, especially if she was on a text page messing with you. Your mom messing with you on the text
page. Yeah, just
page.
Trolling me.
Yeah.
So we were not grading the effectiveness of the trades. It was right. simple sauciness.
That's it, sauciness. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. All right, we've got the Pettycast at the top of the hour. This is going to be a good one. We've also got a Take-A-Mania preview cut coming up in the next segment. You will hear this cut again on Friday. Take a Mania appetizer from a prominent host of a debate show coming up next.
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses like Rise Bakery connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
From the Mokarem Injury Lawyers Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
A lot of people weighing in on the saucy GM trade ratings that we just did in the previous segment. The only one, we had somebody text in, Seth, there might have been a DM I got on Twitter. I think I gave Brian Gain a 1.5. We only did the ones that had made big, big trades. If you didn't make any big trades, you weren't on here. But if I give Brian Gain a 1.5 solely on the Demaryius Thomas trade deadline trade in 2018, if we want to close it out and just have all of them here for the last decade, do we give a rating to James Click here? James Click was a little like Brian Gain in that he didn't make a ton of big deals He did make some deals, though. He made some good deals, James Click did, but they weren't super saucy. In fact, some would argue that might be why that might be what cost him his job, is that he didn't...
Jim Crane said, I need more sauciness.
Show
a little leg, Clicky.
So he lets Click go and then signs Jose Abreu and Montero to big deals and says, here's your sauce, Houston. How do you like this?
Huh? Yeah, if we were doing transactions and not trades, we might have to give it to... Crane where he'd be ranked. Yeah.
Middle Screen said Crane has to be number one. No, Middle Screen, Crane only did signings. He didn't make any trades. Click did the Mancini and Vasquez trade deadline trades in 2022 when they won the World Series. He made some other, like, he's the one who traded Miles Straw for Phil Maton and Yainer Diaz. That's aged tremendously well. Yainer Diaz.
But not saucy saucy.
Not saucy saucy, though, right?
Yeah, Vasquez ended up being a very important trade, but it wasn't saucy.
Yeah, it wasn't saucy. So I'll throw the grade out. I'm going to give Click a 3.5 for sauciness because he's got to be higher than Gain, but I can't have him even in the same orbit as Dana Brown. You know, Dana Brown's made a couple of big trades. So we'll round it out. Click, 3.5. And then I'll put the rest up on Twitter. Nick Caserio got the highest sauciness rating out of any of them.
He did,
according to Seth, 9.0 on
just
a scale of 1 to 10.
He edged out Daryl Morey.
Yep, 8.9.
Only because the sauciness of the James Harden trade, as exciting as it was there was still at the time. If you guys can go back in time, remember there was still a lot of skepticism over just how good is James Harden going to be when he's the guy. So I tried to transport myself back to then. I mean, but obviously, very, very saucy trade.
Very saucy. And then it led to a lot more sauce over the next few years. All right. Joy Taylor was on the Joe Budden podcast and had a take yesterday that really had the internet talking. This was a take... This is an atrocious Caitlin Clark take. It has to do with Caitlin Clark and Angel Reese and the dust up that they had a few weeks ago. Here was Joy Taylor with her take on what that whole dust up has meant to Caitlin Clark's profile.
The Magic Johnson, Larry Bird moment for the WNBA. Like, this is great. I'm a storyteller. I think storylines are so important. I think you need villains. I think you need heroes. Mm-hmm. You need to sell. You got to sell a fight, like brand all of this. Mm-hmm. And it upset white men to watch this strong, winning, unapologetic black woman be in their, you know, be in Caitlin's face.
In their savior's face.
Yeah. And they still cling to it. And it's now like spun to this whole thing where like Caitlin's better than Angel and blah, blah, blah. I just said, we would not be talking about Caitlin Clark the way that we do if it wasn't for that moment with Angel Reese. I will die on this hill. I will die on this hill.
I was with you until that.
I will die on this hill. I will fight this hill.
Joy, chill out.
Okay, so you may have been
credit to those dudes.
Right. You may have been listening to that. If you hadn't heard that audio yet, you may have been listening to that, going, "Oh, okay. Well, the take part of it is the, you know, the racial element to it, which I'm, that's not why I'm playing that audio here. Like there is most certainly a racial element to the Angel Reese, Caitlin Clark dynamic for sure. For some people.
Well, and according to, and that's where you got to segment it out. Cause there is a portion that's totally about that, but then there's a huge portion of people that just on a basketball front are not looking at it that way. Sure,
absolutely. I'm not saying that doesn't exist. That take at the end, then a room full of black guys, by the way.
We're like,
man, okay. So this is have you looked at the numbers for Caitlin Clark? Like, that really raised her that raised Angel Reese's profile, if anything, you know?
Yeah, like, that was a one saying that they're equally good players and everything. This is where, you know, that this has been a big lift up for the WNBA, and that now you've got notable personalities throwing out just horrendous takes that are the way they unanimously pulled back on that was so cool.
Colin, can you play like the last 20 seconds of that cut again? Like, when I'm watching that yesterday, as she's saying that, I'm like, these guys have to. If these guys just not. A lot of times, these podcast hosts will just nod their head at anything
just
their guest says
and be friendly. I didn't realize that Hitler was a swell fellow. Okay,
right?
Oh.
That these guys, a room full of men with a hot woman sitting there, by the way. You know, like Joy Taylor's very attractive. Play it one more time. Like, the reaction is tremendous at the end here.
We would not be talking about Caitlin Clark the way that we do if it wasn't for that moment with Angel Reese. I will die on this hill.
I was with you.
You're dead.
I will die on this hill. Chill out.
Yeah. Well, the craziest thing about that is, like, okay, let's fact check this. Were people talking about Caitlin Clark a lot before that incident?
Yes.
Yes, 100%.
Yes.
And I'm not, and that's the whole thing. Like, because you can't throw a blanket statement out and act like everybody that talks about Caitlin Clark is doing it only for racial purposes. Certainly there's going to be a segment of people, especially who aren't sports fans or whatever, right, that kind of get gravitated to this. And then it tells me that Joy Taylor she's on social media a little too much.
Yeah.
Because that's when you start to get fed all the stuff that, like, oh, the worst possible takes about and the most racially infused takes about Caitlin Clark and Angel Reese are, yeah, they're out there just like there is about every other single thing.
Yep.
But it's absurd. It's absurd.
It is
absurd. It's absurd to act like that's the reason that Caitlin Clark is a big deal.
And people are talking, middle screens texting in, worse than the Reed take. Worse than the Reed take. That would be Cataldi's take on Andy Reed. Yeah, the all-timer.
That's the one thing. I don't, there's a certain time, I love it when guys will kind of get to a point where you're talking about racial stuff or anything, and when guys jump in with, like, no, man, this ain't that. Like, that ain't it, bro. Like, by and large, I'm able to, I think I've been in enough environments where I've seen like black teammates stick up for a white guy by basically just saying, like, no, bro, that ain't it, man. Like, lay the hell off. Like, it's not always so cut and dry, and you can't make everything about race.
You and I are being, I don't know if this is a troll or if this is real.
Yeah.
You guys are selling out. I can't believe I'm having to listen to this.
Selling out about what?
What are we selling out to? That it was a bad, it was a bad take by Joy Taylor. We're not
This is one of those topic police Nazis. Topic Nazis.
Yeah.
Yeah, we got a few topic Nazis that as soon as we veer into anything,
that's probably what it is.
He and he alone came for. Then they get very upset. They get very Gestapo like.
We're giving
like, nine. You'll talk about CJ Stroud. You'll talk about Hunter Brown and nothing else. You Nazi, get off my text line. You fascist.
Oh my god.
You good over there, Shawnee?
No, I'm good. I'm laughing. I'm fine. I wanted more. So that you'll hear that again on Friday. The question is, will that be enough to beat out John McClain, who said the Damon Arnett signing is the worst signing in the history of the franchise for the Texans, and that's the reigning defending Take a Mania champ right now. All right, 713.
You know what? The fun thing about the McClain one will have to be, we got to keep tabs on it, because at the end of the year tournament, what happens with Damon Arnett ultimately might vindicate John McClain.
You never know, man. He gets cut the second week of training camp because he got in trouble off the field.
Yeah, but even then, it would have to be something that flows over into, like, somehow, like, he got arrested alongside 10 other rookies or something.
Yeah.
Like, he led them astray.
Damon Arnett and the entire draft class just got
Damon
pulled
Arnett,
over. Yeah.
Somehow got 15 rookies involved in a dogfighting scandal.
Yeah,
or something.
Exactly. Yeah. All right. I feel like that was a good appetizer to the petty cast that we just did, even though it's going to be in Take a Mania on Friday. Are you ready to get petty? You ready?
Oh, yeah. Okay, good. Yeah. I'm excited about this.
All right, PettyCast. We do the PettyCast. We get petty as hell. We play pettiness. We experience pettiness, and we want your pettiness. 713-572-4610. Tuesday PettyCast coming up next.
Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9-to-5 for a 5-to-9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.